I haven't done this sort of thing in a while, you know, but I'd like to try. Would you?
Her gaze, dark and serious, felt like a weight. The satisfying kind. The weight of expectation that meant someone might almost trust you not to fuck up. His whole body went rigid with anticipation, the kind of, oh shit, giddy nervousness he usually felt before an exhibit. Yeah? He breathed. Chloe. Yes. She smiled, and then she kissed him. It was the slightest brush of her lips over his, once, twice, three times. So soft, so gentle, his heart ached. He held his breath and closed his eyes and bent down for her so she wouldn't hurt herself. His fingers sank into the lush curves of her hips for one desperate moment before he forced himself to relax, to not maul her like a caveman. At least, not until she asked him to. Her fingers fluttered at his jaw, like she wanted to touch him but wasn't sure how to do it right. He wanted to tell her that any way she touched him would be right, but he'd rather step on a rusty fucking nail than break this barely there kiss. Her lips brushed his again, and the sensation seared through him like a shooting star, the kind that streaked the sky for long moments after it had passed. She tasted like minty toothpaste, sharp-tongued sarcasm, surprising hesitance. She was killing him. She was absolutely killing him. Red slid a hand over her jaw and tipped her head back. She sighed as he slanted his mouth over hers and gave her the sweetest kiss he was capable of, because that's what she'd just given him. Slowly, carefully, he sank into the mouth he'd dreamed about. When he felt the edge of her glasses against his cheek, he pulled away to let her take them off, but she followed with a sound of protest. That indecisive hand of hers finally stopped hesitating. She threaded her fingers into his hair and tugged, pulling him closer, trapping him. Apparently, she didn't care about her glasses. His hand slid down from her jaw to her throat, just because he wanted to feel more of her skin. She hummed low and pulled his hair again, setting off flashes of pleasure like camera pops behind his eyelids. Her tongue licked shyly at his, and arousal shot up his spine, bright white and urgent scarlet. She pressed herself against him, full breasts and soft belly and breathless pants into his mouth. One of her hands tugged at his t-shirt before slipping beneath. The glide of her fingertips over his abdomen made him moan like she was sucking him off. Touch me, want me, be mine. He liked to let her lead, but God, someday soon, he'd touch her too, anywhere, everywhere. He wanted to feel her stomach tremble under his lips when she sucked in a breath, wanted to hear her beg for more as he palmed her tits, wanted to taste her hot pussy melting under his tongue. But he had no idea if she was there yet. And the last thing he wanted to do was lose it and rush her. She'd only just decided officially to do this at all. He pulled back slightly, just enough to breathe. Slow down, Chloe. She stopped completely, let go, and stepped away, her gaze awkwardly avoiding his. In an instant, she was stiff and self-conscious, not what he'd wanted. It was so not what he'd wanted that he had to resist the urge to whine like a dog. Instead, he caught her hand and dragged her back into his arms. Don't do that, he said against her hair. This is your spot now. Okay? Chloe hadn't known it was possible to go from mildly embarrassed to melting like goo. But apparently all it took was five short words. This is your spot now. Her voice muffled, since she was currently plastered against Red's wonderful chest. She said simply, oh? When I said slow down, I meant, give me a second before I come.
not go away.
Oh.
She looked up.
He straightened her glasses and tapped her on the nose. Yeah, this is me, checking in. I know you're still not feeling great. She wasn't sure how he noticed things like that. She was up, she was dressed, she was medicated and smiling. He should have had no idea about her slight lingering headache, or the thrum of pain that her patch couldn't quite touch, insistent enough that she was already frustrated. She supposed whatever it was about him that made him notice might be the same thing that made her trust him.
I don't feel that bad,
she muttered, honestly enough. On her personal scale of 1, wonderful, to 10, excruciating,
this was a smooth 6.
6 was fine, 1 point above average. On the rare occasion she got down to a 4, she often wondered how one found the universe's feet in order to kiss them. Apparently, though, Red wasn't impressed by Chloe at a 6, because he just snorted. But he didn't let her go. And when she burrowed deeper into his arms, she felt his hardness through his jeans pressing into her belly and singing through her blood. Well, now, she wasn't letting that go. Not when she decided to be brave.
I think you should kiss me again, she said. And this time, don't do anything silly, like stop.
He smiled, but his eyes were serious. You aren't well.
I'm never well, and my consultant does like to go on about endorphins being natural painkillers and...
Really? Your doctor tells you that?
Well, yes, but usually in a, Chloe, you should go out and have fun sort of way.
Not a Chloe, you should clumsily seduce someone by discussing pain management sort of way. He wrapped an arm around her waist, hugging her tighter against him. No avoiding that erection now. She tried to maintain some dignity, succeeded for half a second, then crumbled like feta and rocked her hips into his. The choked groan he gave was pleasing, the way he screwed his eyes shut and let his head fall back, exposing the vulnerable line of his throat, was intoxicating. Sounding pained, he asked, orgasms cause endorphins, right?
They do.
Want one? She blinked at his lovely flushing throat for a moment. Was this actually working? It seemed so, but she wasn't sure because she suddenly couldn't think straight. Then her backup brain kicked in, the smaller section of her mind that took over like a generator whenever something wiped out her general brain's power. Something such as the casual offer of an orgasm. The backup brain told him,
I'm still wearing my buprenorphine patch, which makes it more difficult for me to do, that.
Want to try? She exhaled sharply.
Yes, please.
Chloe could not be held responsible for the actions of the backup brain. He opened his eyes, and she saw the naked lust there, as if someone had switched on floodlights in the dark. That sharp green gaze settled on her like a ton of bricks. A ton of sexy bricks. Apparently bricks could be sexy when they were shooting from Red Morgan's eyes like lasers. She may or may not be delirious with lust. The backup brain was still in control. Never mind. He cupped her face in his hands like she was something delicate and kissed her like he'd missed her for a lifetime. His calloused thumb swept over her cheeks while their bodies pressed together from chest to thigh, his erection rigid against her belly. His lips claimed hers hungrily, every slick, hot glide of his tongue tugging at something delicious between her thighs. She moaned and he pulled back as if that was what he'd been waiting for. The size of his jet-black pupils made his pale eyes seem strange, otherworldly. Bedroom, he said. She ended up sitting primly on the edge of her bed, with a tightly leashed storm of a man kneeling between her thighs. He wrapped his big hands around her bare ankles and muttered, "You always wear those fucking shoes and these skirts. You drive me out of my mind." He let go, flicked one of the buttons on her jumper, then frowned, fiddled with it for a moment. "Chloe, are these buttons fake?"
"Of course they are," she said. "Actual buttons would be an inefficient use of limited dexterity."
He laughed like she was a headline act at the Apollo. Laughing wasn't exactly what she wanted from him right now, but it was so adorable she let it slide. He rested his head in her lap as he chuckled, and she slid her fingers through the golden fire of his hair until he calmed down. When he looked up at her again, his smile was even brighter than his eyes. "You and your fucking cardigans. Your fake fucking cardigans."
"Do you like cardigans?" she asked pertly.
The last of his amusement faded away, replaced by something raw and animal. "I like yours." She'd never been happier about her own strange obsession with buttons she couldn't use. Before she lost her nerve, she pulled the jumper off over her head.
"See? Efficient."
He didn't answer. Apparently he was too busy staring at her chest. His brow furrowed as if in pain and his eyes fluttered shut for a second before he forced them open again, like he didn't want to miss anything. And then, good Lord, he bit his lip as if he wanted to bite her, as if she made him hungry. Well, the feeling was mutual. She slid her bra straps off her shoulders, but he finally found his voice. "Woman, don't take that thing off unless you want me to die here." She rolled her eyes. "So dramatic." "You don't know how much I want you," he whispered, his gaze devouring her bare skin. "I can't fucking tell you. I don't know how." Maybe that was true. But right now, she thought she heard it in his voice and saw it in his eyes and felt it when he ran his hand from her skirt-covered hip to her waist, to her ribs. He toyed with the lace at the edge of her bra, then leaned forward and kissed her belly. She sucked in a gasp at the rasp of his stubble, the heat of his tongue. Languid need turned the blood in her veins to wine. She tipped her head back and murmured,
"I don't suppose you'd take your shirt off for me, would you?"
"I think that can be arranged." He dragged his shirt over his head. The ache between her thighs only worsened at the sight of him. He was so divine. This close, she finally realized that the tattoos covering his shoulders, his chest, his right side, were the old-fashioned, classic kind that usually came in color. But his were black and gray, an eagle, a stag, a crying woman with roses in her hair. Her gaze traced over every intricately shaded piece. He pushed her skirt up her thighs and said, his voice rough, "I like the way you look at me."
"I..."
His phone beeped. Not a call, but an alarm or reminder. He took it out of his back pocket, pressed a button, then threw it, out of the open bedroom door. She blinked. She'd been rather thoughtless this morning. "Oh, Red, you have..." "I'm busy." "Be quiet."
"I don't think you want me to be quiet."
She said it without thinking and was rewarded with a wicked smile. "No, I don't." He rose upon his knees and kissed her again, licking into her mouth, hungry and filthy in a way that got her really wet really fast. He hiked up her skirt, but instead of touching her desperate pussy, he splayed his hands over her ribs again, slid higher, reached into her bra and cupped the weight of her breasts, squeezing, kneading, shamelessly enjoying. She shuddered against him, moaning into his mouth. He bit her lower lip, then sucked away the sting. Each slow pull sparked electric pleasure in her clit. If he didn't get a move on, she was going to start touching herself. "Here's something I haven't told you," he murmured against her lips. "I love your tits." His thumb swept over her nipples. circled her sensitive areolas, and when she whimpered, he kissed her again fast and hard, as if he wanted to take her pleasure into his body. Then he continued, "I love your tits, but not as much as I love your legs. Don't ask me why. I've been fantasizing about your thighs." His hand skimmed back down her body, over her hips and belly, until he squeezed the aforementioned thighs, all soft and thick and lush. He groaned and pressed hot, open-mouthed kisses to her jaw, her throat, her collarbone. She sucked in a breath when his mouth reached her cleavage and kept going. He'd told her to keep the bra on, but now he muttered, "Fuck it," and pulled down a cup until she spilled out. Then the tip of his tongue, impossibly light and achingly delicate, nudged her nipple. At the contact, a moan shot from her lips, her body arched without permission, her hips rocking forward. He took her nipple into his mouth, sucking hard, and she lost the very last of her control. It was as if she'd been on the edge of consciousness, clinging to lucidity by her fingertips, but now she was tumbling into a dream world. She was lust.
"Red," she gasped, her fingers sinking into his hair. "Oh my God, Red, more!"
She grabbed one of his hands and shoved it between her thighs, rocking her swollen clit into his palm. He released her nipple with one last sweet lick, and her sensitive skin tingled from the rasp of his stubble. She wondered how that same sensation would translate against her inner thighs. God, she wanted that. "You want to know what I like best?" he asked conversationally, as if this was a perfectly ordinary interaction, as if she wasn't frantically grinding against his hand.
"What?"
she gasped, barely caring, barely hearing. "This," he murmured. "You, my desperate little angel, losing it for me." He took his hand away and she whimpered. The sound turned into a moan when he finally pulled down her underwear. "Oh," he said, "and this." Without warning, his thick fingers slid through her folds. Her gasp was ragged, torn from somewhere deep inside her. The way he parted her was so intimate it should have been obscene. He spread her open and said, "You're soft, wet cunt. Oh, Chloe." His thumb circled her clit just right. So right she thought she'd fall to pieces, disappear in a shower of sparks, a fleeting surge of dangerous power. "You're all swollen and slippery, and I..." He broke off. Shut his eyes, his expression agonized, and bit his fist. "No," he muttered. "Not today."
"Yesterday,"
she ordered, spreading her thighs wider, arching her back, showing him everything he claimed to love so much. He held her gaze, his thumb still teasing her clit. "I'm not rushing this. Also, I don't think you have condoms."
"Oh, yes, that was a rather intelligent point. Don't you have one in your wallet or something?"
He snorted. "You're confused about the state of my sex life. No, there's not a condom in my wallet, and even if there was, I wouldn't give you what you want. I'd need to take my time, and I like hearing you beg."
"You're evil."
"You like it?" He cupped her jaw, kissed her gently. He always touched her so carefully. But she didn't feel like he was afraid of breaking her. More like he worshipped her even as he debauched her. More like she was his and precious, but he planned to come all over her anyway.
"Please."
He eased his tongue into her mouth and pushed two fingers inside her. Not deep, not hard. Just teasing, stroking, exploring. When he glided over her G-spot, she stopped breathing for a moment. Then she started again, and her next exhalation was a rush of, "Oh, that, stay there." "Yeah," he whispered against her lips. "Sure you don't want me to." He pulled out and she sobbed. Then he circled her clit, fingers wet with her arousal, his touch so certain she screamed, and then he went back to her G-spot. She clutched his shoulders because she felt like she might faint.
"Red, please, please."
"All right, love," he murmured, his fingers moving faster, his warmth fading as he moved away. His next words were a hot breath against her thigh. "You're so beautiful, so beautiful. And the longer I look, the better it gets." How he could say that when he was shirtless and stunning on his knees before her, torturing her, she had no idea. Then he lowered his head and flicked his tongue over her swollen flesh. And it didn't matter because nothing mattered except feeling, feeling this, feeling him. His mouth was hot and wet and slow, so slow as he licked and sucked her clit. His tongue rubbed every inch of her with shameless intensity, slick and thorough and dizzyingly good. She moaned, choked out his name, pulled his hair, but none of that released the divine, impossible pressure building just beneath her skin. He did that. He loved her steadily, thoroughly, his fingers thrusting deep inside her while he lapped, sucked, pressed deep kisses to her labia the same way he'd owned her mouth. She melted, and he licked up her wetness like nectar. Her orgasm was so powerful she thought she might black out. She released a high, desperate, gasping sound that might have been his name, might have been nonsense, might have been, "Oh my goodness, this is fantastic, thank you so much." Who knew? Certainly not Chloe, because sheer pleasure took up so much of her body that it shoved awareness out of the way to make room. She came until she was nothing but a limp, worn-out mess of a woman, with hot tears spilling over her cheeks. Red held her tight and kissed her hard, and she sucked her own taste from his tongue. Then he brushed his lips over her tears and murmured, "I knew you'd cry." She wasn't sure how her voice still worked, but she managed to ask,
"How?"
"You feel so much," he said simply. Oh, if only he knew. If only he knew how very much she felt for him. Chapter 18. Chloe didn't think it was unreasonable to say that an orgasm courtesy of Red's wicked mouth was now her favourite way to start the day. And speaking of, an orgasm courtesy of Red's wicked hands was her favourite way to float into sleep. She could say that with certainty, because on Thursday night, he came back after work and made her dinner and approved the work she'd done on his website so far. Then he took her to bed and stroked her until she fell apart for him. He wasn't there when she woke up on Friday morning, but he'd left something behind on her desk, right beside her computer. A message scrawled in his familiar handwriting on one of her pink sticky notes. "Call if you need me. I'll see you tomorrow. For camping." Underneath, he'd scribbled a cute little picture of a tree. What exactly made the picture cute? She couldn't say, except for the fact that it came from Red. So he'd be busy until tomorrow, would he? She found herself smiling at the thought of all the things he might be getting up to. For someone who'd once seemed like her antithesis, he had a secret fondness for plans that made her want to kiss his lovely, blushing cheeks. She ran a finger over his cartoon tree and sighed. Camping. Ick. Not exactly her forte, but she had the oddest feeling that she'd enjoy it anyway. There was a warm, jittery thrill in her stomach, like the screaming smile of someone on a roller coaster. This, she decided, was how an adventure should feel. Not like an ordeal, the way drinking and dancing had, but like a welcome risk. When she and Red had left that awful nightclub, a seed of possibility had started growing in Chloe, daring and electric. Maybe the list should be more than a box-ticking exercise. Maybe it should mean more. Maybe changing it wasn't the end of the world. Now that seed had become a sapling, and Chloe was ready to make changes. A little apprehensive, but ready all the same. She found her glittery blue notebook and sat at her desk, Red sticky note beside her, a momentous weight in the air. After a moment's hesitation, she crossed out item 2, "Enjoy a drunken night out," with quick, sharp lines of her pen. Beside the crossed-out entry, she wrote simply, awkwardly, with a what-am-I-doing wince, "Call Annie. Be nice. Make friends." Danny often said that writing down one's desires, even in the slightest way possible, was a vital step in manifesting one's ideal future. Chloe often replied that that was nonsense, but the truth was, she believed in it. She stared down at the altered list with growing satisfaction, like a streetlight slowly switching on as the sun set behind it. She crossed out item 5, meaningless sex, with relish. And then she wrote something else, an entirely new entry, because he made her feel entirely new things. Another wish, another manifestation, a stepping stone to an ideal future she only dared to peek at through splayed fingers. One she was determined to reach out and grab. 8. Keep red. Contacting Annie proved to be the easiest list item Chloe had ever completed. When she forced herself to find the mysterious hot pink card and type its number into her phone, she was still on a list editing high, utterly dauntless. Perhaps that was why, when Annie suggested coffee that very afternoon, Chloe agreed without even checking her schedule. She was spontaneous, after all. She was flexible. She was committed to her new and improved list. Hours later, she was also nervous. She sat at a table in a busy, overloud and likely unhygienic coffee shop in Harebell, which could only be described as the hipster quarter of the city. Of course, Annie, with her strange outfits and excellent business cards, had wanted to meet here. And yet she wasn't here, leaving Chloe to sit by the cold window like a shivering loner. Wonderful. But waiting wasn't all bad. It gave her time to text her new favourite contact. Chloe. Guess where I am? Red. Climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. Chloe. Not yet? Red. I hope you haven't gone to New York without me. She stared at that message for long, happy heartbeats. 1,000 wonderful implications threading through her mind like a never-ending daisy chain. Perhaps they'd go to New York together, because they were together, and they shared goals and future plans and things. Chloe. I'd never go without you. I'm at a coffee shop, waiting for Annie. Red. What? Red. Annie? Red. Actually, I don't care which Annie it is. You're waiting for someone to have coffee. Not to throw the coffee at them or anything, but to actually have coffee. She snorted, clapping a hand over her mouth. Chloe. Yes? Honestly, what on earth do you think of me? Red. That you're short-tempered and always interesting. Chloe. You are a very difficult man. Red. That must make me perfect for you. Winky face. She was still smiling when Annie arrived. Chloe! Annie plonked herself down in the seat across the table with a sound like a bubble bursting. There you are! Chloe stared. There she was. She'd been here for the last 30 minutes, for Christ's sake. Yes, she said dryly. Here I am. So sorry I'm late. I had a Marmite disaster. Oh, that sounds... Vitamin rich? Very. Annie's golden curls were pinned almost flat to her head with what appeared to be 1,000 black hair slides. She was wearing her enormous camo coat again, but she unzipped it to reveal a surprisingly ordinary outfit that consisted of jeans and a raspberry-coloured jumper. Coffee? She asked brightly. Since Chloe had been politely waiting before ordering and ignoring the death glares of the lady behind the counter for half an hour, she nodded eagerly before realising what she was agreeing to. Oh, no, coffee for me, but I'll get tea. My treat. Annie was up and off before Chloe could say another word. She was so springy, energetic, possibly earnest, potentially a master of sarcasm. Chloe wasn't sure which, but she suspected her own prickliness stemmed from an urgent desire to find out and a worry that she never would. How long had it been since she'd made and kept a friend? So long she must have lost the ability, rather like a wasted muscle. She should have been doing social exercises alongside her physiotherapy all these years. She found her own distorted reflection in the shiny metal sugar cup at the centre of the table and gave herself a stern look. pull yourself together, she told the metallic Chloe with the aubergine-shaped head. Think victorious thoughts, triumphant thoughts, the thoughts of a woman who succeeds in all endeavours.
An excellent philosophy,
Annie said. Oops. Chloe slapped on a smile and tried to look less like someone who encouraged their own reflection in the middle of cool coffee shops. Annie set down a tray of hot drinks, took her seat again, and said,
So, are you still cross with me about Perdita?
I wasn't cross with you.
I know you were. I would be too if it were me. Purdy's a doll.
Annie paused.
Well, as far as cats go, I don't actually like them that much.
Chloe said, You don't?
Gosh, no. I'm more of a dog person. But the thing is, I have to look after them. It's part of the deal.
The deal? Annie's voice dropped.
With the goddess of the underworld.
Oh, dear. Annie's voice dropped further as she went on.
My mother.
Ah. That was quite a bit less bonkers. You made some sort of deal with your mother that involves looking after cats.
11 cats. Thankfully, most are outdoors. I have to keep them all safe and tend to their needs with my own fair hand as much as is possible.
Chloe stared, aghast. And
what on earth do you get out of the bargain? I get to live in my mother's house while she sails the world on a piddling little boat with her third husband, Lee. Now, I know what you're thinking. Only 3 husbands? But my mother was quite young when she had me, so she's not as mature as you'd assume. Hopefully, by the time she hits her 60s, she'll have found a rhythm and will be on her 5th husband at least.
I'm sure, Chloe agreed. There is nothing wrong with being a late bloomer.
Certainly not. I myself, however, am a lost cause.
Annie said.
34 years old and not a single husband, divorced, deceased, or otherwise disposed of.
Me neither. I blame the modern age for an outrageous gap in my education. Schools simply aren't providing their girls with the skills needed to acquire and eliminate spouses.
Hear, hear. So, since you, like myself, suffer from a lack of life insurance checks and or alimony, what is it you do to keep yourself in chocolate biscuits and such?
I'm a web designer. Chloe said, I ought to give you my card. It's not as good as yours.
Flatterer.
But Annie looked pleased. She had a Julia Roberts sort of mouth, so it was impossible to miss the smile she tried to hide. Chloe found herself smiling wider in return. And what do you do? Because really, she'd been dying to know, and she still hadn't allowed herself to look.
I'm a lingerie designer,
Annie said. Goodness, that's...
Your bra doesn't fit, by the way.
Chloe blinked and looked down at her own chest. It...
Sorry. Auntie always tells me not to say things like that, but you seem the type who likes to know what's what.
I am.
How can you tell it doesn't fit? Oh, please don't worry, you look lovely, but I can tell.
Chloe nodded. So I don't look as if I have one giant central boob or anything?
Certainly not.
Annie said immediately,
not at all.
Oh, good. Well, I suppose I need to go bra shopping then. An idea struck her, the sort she'd usually dismiss out of hand, the sort she'd be too afraid to say out loud in case she was struck down and embarrassed. But Chloe was being brave these days, so she pulled herself together and blurted it out.
Perhaps at some point you'd be interested in advising me on...
I'll come with you.
Annie said immediately.
Shopping. We'll make a day of it.
Chloe beamed. That had been easy. That had been beyond easy.
Wonderful. Yes, let's.
Spending the day without Chloe had felt kind of like shaving off his hair. Or maybe Red's appointment with Dr. Maddox was to blame for that. After 2 sessions in relatively quick succession, he wasn't exactly enjoying therapy. But he was enjoying how much more he understood his own head. And kind of like Chloe ticking shit off her list, he felt better every time he went. He could say the same about the phone call he'd had with Vic, even though it had been about as easy as therapy. Telling his best friend he was ready to move on, to leap back into the real world independently and leave this safety net behind? That was one thing. Admitting to his boss that he'd been literally sleeping with a tenant? Not quite the same moment of brotherly love. But at least Vic hadn't driven over to kick him in the nuts. That would have made Red's plans for the weekend a hell of a lot more difficult to accomplish. Now it was Saturday afternoon, and he was standing on Chloe's doorstep with two duffel bags, already smiling. He'd knocked, which meant he was 5 seconds closer to seeing her again, to hearing her voice, instead of imagining it as he read her texts, to touching her. She opened the door. The first thing he noticed were her eyes, bright and excited behind her glasses. Maybe because she wanted to see him, too. Or maybe she was unexpectedly buzzed about camping. She certainly looked prepared. Her hair was in one of those fancy-looking braids he didn't know the name of, and she was dressed in colour-coordinated walking gear. Usually he'd miss her pretty skirts, but the leggings clinging to her thick thighs suited him fine. "Stop staring at me, you pervert," she said. He looked up, just as she launched herself at him. Between the force of Chloe flinging her arms around him and the weight of the bags on his shoulders, it was a miracle he didn't collapse. But he managed to stay upright, and his reward was her mouth. She kissed the hell out of him. Reality shifted, shrinking to a fine point that consisted of nothing but her hands tangling in his hoodie and her tongue easing tentatively over his. She smelled like rain-scattered flowers and warmth and comfort and mindless fucking lust. He couldn't hold her the way he wanted to, so he let his mouth speak for his occupied hands. He tasted her like sweet nectar, bit her lower lip, swallowed her soft little moans greedily. Then after the shortest forever on earth, she pulled away, broke the kiss, rested her forehead against his, and closed her eyes, breathing heavily for a moment. The sound of her panting made him smile. She opened her eyes and murmured, "Hi." "Hi," he replied, his voice rough. "I take it you're excited to camp." She laughed and pulled him aside, shutting the door behind them. "Gosh, yes." He followed her into the living room, noticing happily that the flat was just tidy enough to suggest that she was feeling okay. "Really?" "Of course," she drawled. She was kneeling on the floor by a single enormous rucksack, fiddling with the straps and sliding a pink water bottle into a side pocket. "I'm like a child going to Disneyland. I can't wait to be trampled by moose in the night, or perhaps eaten by a bear, or chopped up by a serial killer, wrapped up in pieces of the tent and kept in a freezer for the next 5 years." He pinched the bridge of his nose, shaking his head. "Button, we don't have to do this. You know that, right?" "Of course I know it. I want to do something that scares me." "Camping," he said. "Camping scares you." "No comment." She gave him a sphinx-like smile. He wanted to kiss it off her face. "Well, you don't need to worry," he said finally, putting down his massive bags. "I'm not gonna let anyone chop you up." "Right, because you're a big strong man who can fight off seasoned machete murderers with the power of your mighty masculinity." He would not laugh. "And we don't have moose, Chloe, or bears." She turned to look at him.
"I'm quite certain that we do."
"We don't."
"We definitely have bears."
"We don't. If we had bears, it'd be in the news all the time. You know, find upstanding British man, attacked by a bear, EU to blame, Brexit now."
"I'm quite certain I saw that headline on a copy of the Daily Mail the other week."
"You didn't, love."
She tutted, as if he was being unreasonable. "We'll see.
Do you have bug repellent, by the way?"
"I do."
Bug repellent? Where did she think they were going? A swamp? "Are you offering to share?"
She sniffed. "You really should have brought your own. Two bags and you didn't bring your own."
"I've got other stuff in my bags,"
he said, sitting on the floor beside her.
"Such as?"
He unzipped his duffel and pulled out a packet of marshmallows that was the size of a child.
"We're gonna make s'mores and shit."
She dropped the bug repellent and jumped him again, literally threw herself into his lap. He barely caught her. And then she was kissing him. Kissing him.
kissing him with a kind of hot, dark determination he felt for her, and it was wonderful. Her hand slid into his hair, her body rocked against his, and he felt as if she'd reached into his chest and squeezed his heart, because it was suddenly, blatantly obvious that it belonged to her. He belonged to her. He blinked, dazed, unsure of what to do with all these intense, impossible feelings. She pulled away, her laughter bright and infectious.
S'mores! I do love a man with a food-related plan. I hope you know we're going to finish that bag.
He smiled, but he couldn't even speak. That divine rococo face had turned him on and pissed him off from the very beginning. But now when he looked at her, he didn't see her untouchable beauty so much as he saw Chloe. His Chloe, with that sardonic tilt to her lips and that superior gleam in her eyes. His heart shook. He ran his hands over her body just to remind himself that he could, that she was real and there and his. She felt soft and lush beneath what seemed to be 3 or 4 layers of clothing. He grabbed a handful of her arse and finally managed to say, "That's my girl."
"Shut up, you misogynist pig."
She kissed his right cheek, then his left. "I didn't see you yesterday."
"No, you didn't. Did you miss me?"
"Choke, Redford, just choke." He seemed to adore her more every second. This could be a problem. "Come here." He kissed her again, because she was addictive. But then he reminded himself that he had specific and important plans, none of which included fucking Chloe on her living room floor. With a sigh, he nudged her off his lap. "All right, stop distracting me. We gotta go."
"Distracting you?" she said, then grabbed her rucksack and stood, hands on her hips. She was moving faster, more easily than usual, even for a good day. "Honestly, I can't stand you sometimes."
But she was smiling, big and uncontained, just like him. Red made fun of Chloe's driving all the way to the campsite, and she couldn't even bring herself to mind. When he'd learned she actually had a car, he'd feigned deathly shock, which was ridiculous because he must have known already.
"Who do you think was parking in my designated space?"
she demanded.
"I had no idea,"
he said cheerfully. "Drug dealers? Aliens, maybe?" On the way to the site he'd chosen for them, a place named Tyburn's Wood, they got lost 3 times in a maze of sweet little villages with houses built of stone. After the 3rd time, Red turned off her sat-nav and pulled out a bright yellow booklet. She snorted as he opened it on his lap, revealing the kind of massive multicoloured map that made her eyes blur far worse than any line of code ever had.
"What on earth is that monstrosity?"
"It's what human beings used to get around for the last couple 1,000 years, you know, instead of relying on fancy sky computers." It was all she could do not to veer off the road.
"Fancy sky computers? Why, Redford, I had no idea you were such a technophobe."
"Not a technophobe," he said in his lying voice. "Second left up there. No, Chloe, left." "You really don't know your left and your right, do you? Maybe I shouldn't blame the sat-nav."
"The sat-nav? Don't you mean the fancy sky computer?"
"Fuck off," he grinned. And so it continued until they finally reached the campsite. Tyburn's Wood was, once you got past the vast open field of expensive motorhomes, a literal wood. Behind a series of huge log cabins and the neatly organised holiday park, a dense sea of tall, spindly evergreens stabbed the sky, upright and tightly packed like centurions. There were a few clear paths in and out, with big, colourful signs depicting various trails and pitch-ready locations. As they unloaded the car, or rather as Red unloaded the car, while Chloe leaned against a nearby wooden fence, he pointed at one of the signs and said, as if he were talking to a toddler, "Look, baby, a map. You remember maps, right? Nice pictures with lines that show you where to go." She bent, scooped up a handful of bark chips and threw them at him.
"Excuse me,"
a brusque voice cut in.
"Please, don't throw the bark."
Chloe looked over, cheeks warm, expecting to see some campsite staff member glaring at them.
Instead, she found a pair of yummy mummies with about 58 kids between them, some shoved into sporty-looking strollers, some perched on the women's Lululemon-clad hips, most running around, throwing bark at each other, and having a fabulous time.
Sorry,
Chloe said. One of the mums sniffed, as if to say, "You ought to know better." The other mum pursed her lips as if to say, "Setting a bad example for the children." The sniff and the lip pursing were very effective. Clearly they were excellent mums. As they herded their broods away, Red wandered over to her and murmured, "How come you're never so well behaved with me?"
"You're not a mum,"
she said pertly, ignoring how close he was, how rough his voice was, how his body gave off sheer heat, and she wanted to wrap up in him like he was a blanket.
"You don't get to boss me around."
He dragged his gaze over her from head to toe, slow and sweet and sticky like honey. She wanted him to lick her just like that, thoroughly, everywhere. He probably would if she asked. His hands came to rest on either side of her on the fence, so that his arms caged her in, his body crowding hers. His lips hovered over her ear and he whispered, "You'd let me boss you around."
"I would not,"
she drawled, as if the ghost of his mouth over her skin didn't send delicious little shocks down her spine.
"You sure? Not even if I think you'd like it."
His lips moved from her ear to her throat. He kissed her there, the sweet, subtle glide of his tongue making her body hum with erotic energy. Then he stopped for long enough to ask in a low, rough voice,
"Would you let me boss you around if I made it good?"
"Maybe,"
she admitted, her voice alarmingly breathy. He kissed her throat again, hotter and wetter this time.
"Just maybe."
"Yes."
She bent her head, exposed more of her throat to him, her pulse racing.
"Good. Now, listen carefully."
His hand caught hers, but he didn't lace their fingers together like usual. Instead, he gave her something that felt like paper and said seriously,
"I want you to read the map."
He stepped away, his slight smile coming into focus as her dizzying lust disappeared. She looked at her hand and found she was holding a printed-out Tyburn's Wood leaflet that, according to the chirpy front cover, included a map of the campsites. Caught between outrage and laughter, she bit her lip, sucked in a breath and said,
"Redford Morgan." "Don't worry, I'll help you with your left and right." "I know my left and right,"
she spluttered, shoving at his big, annoying, handsome chest.
"Sure you do, Button,"
he soothed. Then he wrapped an arm around her waist, dragged her close, and laughed into her hair. There were sights spread far and wide, but Red insisted they stay close to the edge of the woods. They chose a little clearing where the light filtered through the slender tree trunks like something out of a painting, and Chloe took a minute to fill her lungs with fresh, frosty air, the kind that was just cold enough to seem wet, even though it was dry. The setting sun's honeyed rays were so warm, golden fire, just like Red's hair, but they couldn't touch the forest's crisp autumn chill. She liked that. In fact, despite her last-minute misgivings, she liked a lot about this particular list item so far, but she especially liked her companion. She turned to find him already grappling with the tent and said,
"Did you choose this spot because of me?"
She knew the answer, just like she'd known she wouldn't need to remind him of how far, or not, she could walk. He gave her a wary look, then returned to fiddling with tent poles.
"You don't know how you'll feel tomorrow morning. Seems smart to stay near the car."
There was no fighting the smile that crept across her face. She wandered over to him and grabbed a few tent poles of her own.
"You're very thoughtful."
"Yep. I thought long and hard about all the ways I want to defile this tent tonight, and I decided to factor that into our plans."
He shot her a grin that only widened when he caught sight of her face.
"Oh, Chloe, am I embarrassing you?"
A blush crept up her throat. She felt like she'd swallowed a star. Hot, hot,
burning and bright and fundamentally unstable inside.
Does that mean... are you finally going to let me...
screw my brains out, he offered cheerfully. She choked on fresh air. I am embarrassing you, he said, clearly pleased. Wait until you see the air mattress.
The what?
She almost shrieked. He gave her an odd look. Well, you didn't think I was going to fuck you on the ground, did you? I'm not a complete animal.
You, sir, are a menace to good and decent society and to noble, chaste women such as myself.
She might have been insulted at how hard he laughed if she wasn't giggling too. Red put the tent up with disturbing speed, produced both the famous air mattress and a foot pump from his magical duffel bag. I told you, I had more important things than bug spray. And slipped inside the tent to arrange things, whatever that meant. Then he came out and showed her a mysterious tin. Eyes bright in the growing darkness told her, time for the campfire. She sat in the dirt outside the tent and was very proud of herself for not thinking about wolf poop or grass snakes or possessive murderous wood fay.
Actually, Red, I've been researching and campfires are ill...
He popped open the weird tin and said, Chloe.
Yes?
Shush. He put the tin into a little well of dirt he'd created and took a silver Zippo from the pocket of his ever-present leather jacket. No, I don't smoke, he said, just as she opened her mouth. She closed her mouth again. Was she predictable, or did he just know her that well? Possibly a bit of both. She watched in confusion, then something like awe, as he lit whatever was in the tin. He sat back beside her, and they let the flames grow. What on earth is that thing? She asked.
It's a portable, reusable, relatively safe and eco-friendly.
He valiantly ignored her snort. Campfire. If we want to put it out, we can just put the lid on again.
Seriously? And that works?
Sure. It's science or whatever. Want to toast some marshmallows?
It was a juvenile, still probably illegal and definitely unhygienic activity that belonged to the world of silly American films.
Yes, please, she said.
Good. I lied about the s'mores thing, though. I don't know what the fuck s'mores are.
She snorted.
Neither do I.
Reaching for his bag, he said, I'll open the marshmallows. You go and collect twigs to stick 'em on. She stared. He stared back at her with a stressfully serious expression for 2 long seconds before he cracked, those cat-like eyes creasing at the corners as he threw back his head and laughed.
Oh, my God, Chloe, relax. Look, I bought skewers.
Oh,
she pressed a hand to her chest.
I was really reconsidering this entire thing.
Camping?
Letting you put your tongue in my mouth again?
Shut up, he grinned. You'd always let me put my tongue in your mouth.
Maybe in secret moments of weakness, she admitted.
Give me that. I want to put my own marshmallows on. You sure? You don't want the assistance of a marshmallow skewering expert.
She rolled her eyes and took the bag of marshmallows from him.
No, but speaking of that expertise...
This feels like a great time to make a joke about penetrating soft sweet things.
She ignored him.
Why are you so good at camping type stuff?
Ah, well.
He stared thoughtfully at the skewer in his hand, his hair falling over his face for a moment. The fingers of his free hand began to drum against his thigh, and she wondered, with more than a little regret, how she'd managed to turn camping into a topic that made him nervous or unsettled or whatever it meant precisely when he got this way. Biting her lip, she said hurriedly,
You don't have to...
No, it's okay.
He looked up at her with a smile, but it was a sad sort of smile.
Honestly, Chloe, it's fine.
And then those drumming fingers stopped and found hers, and now he was holding her hand instead.
I just got a little bit... You know how I told you about my granddad who died?
She nodded, feeling those silver rings against her skin.
He used to take me places like this, all over. Not that often, maybe once or twice a year, when he had time off. But it adds up, yeah. We lived in the city,
and he was paranoid about air pollution and all that. He had this idea that spending time in nature every so often could, I don't know, clean you out. Red chuckled. Chloe squeezed his hand, her marshmallows forgotten.
What was his name?
Leo. Just the word curved Red's mouth into a smile, and she was struck by an odd certain certainty that Redford Morgan's near-constant cheer had come from one man in particular, Leo.
He sounds wonderful, she murmured.
Yeah, he was. Sometimes I wonder... He trailed off, but she thought she knew what he was going to say. She knew because she knew him. Not just the achingly cool, charming, handsome man who was quick to joke and quicker to help, but the not-so-shiny parts beneath that formed the foundation of who he was. The parts that some people might look away from because they were a little less easy to swallow. The parts that called to her just as much as his sweet smiles.
You wonder if he'd be disappointed in you.
The way Red, as she'd realised over these past weeks, was disappointed in himself. Because of whatever it was that happened to you in London. He turned to look at her so fast, his hair flew around his face like a flame. London was... He sighed, his grip on her hand tightening. Yeah. He cleared his throat. Sorry. I don't know why I brought this up. Did I bring this up? Look, have a marshmallow.
Red, she whispered. You don't always have to be okay.
She leaned closer and pressed a kiss to his cheek. He was still for a moment. But then he looked at her and smiled and murmured,
I know, but I am okay with you.
The moment shimmered with something beautiful and delicate, and it wasn't broken when he turned away. It lingered fine and lovely under the surface. He pushed a marshmallow onto her skewer, and when she complained, he popped one into her mouth too. Then he loaded up his own and showed her exactly how close to hold them to the fire and for how long. Then, when her mouth was full of the first hot, sticky, melting bite, he caught her gaze and said in the gravelly voice that rolled right over her clit,
Now, in the name of camping, bad decisions, and your list, you and me are gonna play a game.
Chapter 19. Red watched as the sympathy left Chloe's dark gaze, replaced by something hotter than campfire. Her lips curled, that familiar uneven smile, so sexy he felt it in his chest and his balls.
What kind of game? She asked.
Her tongue snaked out to catch a dripping blob of marshmallow, and every inch of his body snapped to attention. He hadn't thought this whole toasted marshmallow thing through. He hadn't considered how fucking irresistible she'd look licking up gooey white dessert, or how the light of the fire would make her skin glow like polished mahogany, and her eyes light up like smoky amber. He hadn't imagined something this innocent could make him want to suck sugar off her tongue and drag her into the tent. He should have, though. He always wanted Chloe, in every possible way. She was still waiting for a response, arching those winged eyebrows at him. So he cleared his throat and finally answered,
21 questions. It's a time-honored camp tradition amongst people who are trying to get into each other's sleeping bags.
She crossed her ankles and leaned closer, her shoulder bumping his. The simple touch shimmered through his core like a shot of molten gold.
I'm assuming you didn't learn that from your granddad.
He swallowed to clear the roughness in his throat. This whole experience was for her, and she seemed to be enjoying it, so he wasn't going to grab her and make it all about his lust, at least, not yet.
I learned it the same place I learned about s'mores, smart ass. You can't deny. This game looks fun in films.
Oh, I don't know about that. Isn't it the game where a girl asks something useful like, what's your favourite animal?
And then a horny little monster, a boy, uses his turn to ask if she's ever had anal sex.
Red's lips twitched. Maybe. Luckily, I'm not a horny little monster.
Lie.
So I'll only be asking you very meaningful questions. But you can go first. She tapped her fingers against her lower lip.
I need more marshmallows to help me think.
Don't start. He nudged her shoulder. Must have caught her by surprise, because she almost toppled over in response, saved only by his hand on her arm.
An attack!
She cried, all dramatic, as if they were in a film. It's not my fault your balance sucks. He pulled her up again. Actually, he sort of picked her up a bit and settled her between his legs. Now his thighs bracketed hers, her back resting against his chest. She was close enough that he could smell the floral stuff she put in her hair over the smoky sweetness of toasted marshmallows. Close enough that her body heat seared into him like a brand. Perfect. All right, he said, trying to sound authoritative. Now, you start. She didn't hesitate.
Were you teased at school about your name and, you know, your hair and everything?
Yeah. He wrapped his arms around her like he was a fucking koala and she was his forever tree. I got some shit at school, who didn't? But it never bothered me. My mum gave me this name. She told me it's a good one. And her hair's a hell of a lot redder than mine. But I always thought she was the prettiest lady in the world, so I didn't care what people said about the colour.
The crackling of the fire and the rustles of the forest rained for a second. They even heard someone whooping in the distance. Then Chloe said with a smile in her voice,
Well, that's incredibly sweet. I mean, I already knew you were a